Greetings and welcome back to another ongoing series of Shirim on Daf Yomi. My name is Yitzchak Et Shalom. We are now on Daf Samach Aleph Amud Bet of Masechet Bava Metzia, near the beginning of our discussion of the Isurim of Neshech and Tarbit. We will pick up now at Ve'ezahu Tarbit Amrabele Perot Ketzal Lakachem Enochitim Dinar Zahav, etc. The quote here is from the second line of the Mishnah, which gives the example of ribit. And then, as we noted already in the first sugya, it gives an example of ribit derabanan with taking wheat and then wanting to give it back, to get it back at the higher price, etc. So the phrase, ezahu ribit, makes it sound like this is ribit. But the earlier case of borrowing four for five, etc., is not ribit. So Amri Abavahu, Ad Kan Shel Torah, Mikan Ve'elach Shel Divrahim. It means that everything till now was Ribit D'Oraita, from here on is Ribit D'Rabanan. V'chein Amarava, Ad Kan Shel Torah, Mikan Ve'elach Shel Divrahim. So you see that both in Eretz Yisrael and in Bavel, they understood that the second part of the Mishnah was dealing with Ribit D'Rabanan. And then it said, Ad Kan Yachin Rasha V'Yilbash Tzadik. Now this is talking about how this is darshan to say that a son who inherits ribit from his father does not need to return it. So it means only up until this point that halacha applies. And it's a little bit strange to say that if it's ribit d'oraita, the son doesn't have to return it. Because ribit d'rabbanani does. Adkan tulo. Ela filu adkan yachin rasha v'bash tzadik. What it means is even the earlier ribit, which is d'oraita, the son still does not have to return. Adkan ribit k'tzutza mikan ve'elach avak ribit. Until this point, it's set ribit, four for five, etc., and straight up ribit. This is now called avak ribit. Now, what's the difference between avak ribit and ribit ktsutsa? The practical difference. Amar Rabbi Elazar, ribit ktsutsa yotza b'dayanim. The dayanim can force ribit ktsutsa to be returned to the love. Avak ribit ena yotza b'dayanim. But avak ribit, like the case we had with the wheat and the wine, etc., that cannot be coerced. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, so if machloket in Tveria between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan, Afilu Rabbi Ktsutsa nami ena yotza v'dayanim. He said, even Rabbi Ktsutsa is not forced out. Meaning, no rebit is if somebody charges and collects rebit, the Beit Din does not force him to give it back. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, my tamad Rabbi Yochanan. So why did Rabbi Yochanan say this? De Amar Kra b'neshech natan v'tarbit lakach v'chai lo yichya kol atov v'ta'ila asa. This is in Yechezkel Yudched. It was a very critical parak in which Yechezkel essentially defeats the famous adage Avot achlu bosar v'shinei banim tikana, that fathers have eaten sour grapes and the teeth of the children or of their sons are set on edge, meaning the children suffer for their parents' sins. And he has a long piece there. He says if a person is a tzaddik and he has bad sons and his sons do terrible things, they will not be saved because of their father's tzidkut. And if a father is a rasha and his children are tzaddikim, then his children will not suffer for his sins, etc. And one of the examples is v'neshech natan v'tarbit lakach v'chai lo yichyed kol atova ta'ila asa. If somebody takes neshech and tarbit, he won't live, rather he will die. And it goes on to say, but his son will not suffer. L'mitan nitan v'lo lishavon, meaning that the proper kapara for this is death and not to return it. He has it from the pasuk of the prohibition of ribit in the Torah. Meaning, the proper response is supposed to be the fear of God and not necessarily returning it. Meaning that this is a violation that you should not think you have a way out afterwards. Fear God and don't do it. Rava Amar Migufe de Krashmiela. He says the Pasuk in Yechezkel tells you itself. You don't have to infer anything because the end of the Pasuk is Motumat Damav Boyet. He shall die and his blood is on his own head, as it were. Min, which is a phrase that we're familiar with from Perak Chaf in Vayikra, in the context of people who are executed for violations of avarayot. Hukshu malveri bit l'shofchei damim. So somebody who lends beribit is compared to a shofech damim. Ma shofchei damim lo nitnu lihishavon. Just like when you kill somebody, you can't restore them. Af malveri beribit lo nitnu lihishavon. Oddly enough, even though when you lend on interest and you collect the interest, you could return that money. No, you can't return the money. It's like killing somebody, and therefore don't return. So those are three different explanations, which are variations on the same idea of why Rabbi Yochanan said that even Rabbi Ktsutsa is not returned. But what about Rabbi Elazar's opinion? Why does Rabbi Elazar say it is returned? the end of the pasuk of not taking rebate says you have to let your brother live with you, meaning the whole prohibition of rebate is grounded in the idea that your brother has to also be able to live. He's poor, he borrowed money. You can't gouge him in such a way that he's now not able to live. So now that you took the rebate, return it so he can live. It's like pikuach nefesh. By the way, note that both Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan, based on these interpretations, grounded their reasoning in something of matters of life and death, either life and death of the borrower or the life and death of the lender, who is the perpetrator here, who perhaps ought to die and not have an easier way out, as it were. Now, what does Rabbi Yochanan do v'chai achi chaimach? Because that's right there in the pasuk, and it should mean you have to return it to him so he can live. And this is one of the most famous passages in the Gemara, certainly one of the most famous passages in Bava Metzia. If two people were walking on the way, we imagine them in the desert, and one of them has a canteen or something, and now they're in the desert, they're stuck. If they both drink from the water, they somehow are able to judge that if they both drink from the water, by the time help comes, they'll be dead. But if one drinks, then he could save himself. Now, of course, one person's holding the bottle. Darash ben petura mutav shishtu shnehem v'yamutu. Better that they should both die, or drink a little bit, and die. It's a strange phrase, because it doesn't say that one person should not, as it were, live on the blood of another fellow, but rather, the worst thing they'd possibly do is to sit there and drink while you watch your friend die. So better that both should die than one of them should save himself at the expense of the other. An Shabbat Rabbi Akiva only made, that was the halacha, until Rabbi Akiva came along and used our pasuk, v'chai achi chaimach. What does that mean? Your brother should be able to live with you, meaning your life comes first, and then your brother should also be able to live with you. So what does you have to take care of yourself? Which, of course, is the anchor that holds down all the halachot about not giving too much tzedakah, etc., so that you shouldn't come to the position where you end up needing, and other people have to support you. So Meitavei, we have a challenge for Rabbi Yochanan. If father left his children rebate money that he collected, even though they know it's rebit, in the inheritance, they don't have to return it to the love. What's the implication? The implication is the father himself does have to return it. So you see, you do have to return rebit, like Rabbi Elazar. So the answer to that is, really, father doesn't have to return it either. So why'd you pick the children? Because in the Seifa we had to say, quote, but if father left them a cow or a talit or something that he stole, and it's clear and well known, they do have to return it in order to show honor to their father. In other words, people are going to, the whole time they're riding on that animal or they're wearing those garments, they're going to say, oh yeah, that's the one your father stole, and the father's name continually is besmirched, so then they have to return it. So therefore, Taninami Reisha B'didhu, therefore the Reisha, they also mention it in the context of the children returning or not returning, but really the father does not return either. That is how Rabbi Yochanan would answer. Wait a second, if father is a thief, since when do the children have to show honor to him and worry about his reputation? Kari kan v'nasiv amcha lo ta'or. We are now going to apply the pasuk v'nasiv amcha lo ta'or, which we last saw in the context of Mishapara, about whether or not we really curse somebody. And the drasha was, it's only if somebody behaves like a proper Jew, then we're not allowed to curse them. But in other words, if somebody behaved improperly, then children are not obligated to save their father's reputation if the father was anganav. Now, there's another consideration. Children may want to, but that's a different thing. Are they obligated to do it? The answer is, this case where the children have to return the item is where the father did tshuva. As the father repented and was contrite for his actions, if father did tshuva, so why is the cow still in his possession? His answer is, though he speak lachzer chemet, it was a deathbed tshuva, and he didn't have a chance to return it. So we have another challenge to Rabbi Yochanan. Hagazlaninu malve rebit, which we think is two categories: gazlanim and people lend rebit. Alpha pisha gavu machzirin, even though they already collected, they have to return. What does that mean? Gazlanim may alpha gapisha gavuika. What kind of collection is there for gazlanim? E gazul gazul. If they've already stolen it, it's stolen. Ilo gazul gazlanim kari. If they didn't yet collect the steal, why are you calling the gazlanim? What do you mean collect? What does that mean? Ela imam gazlanim may nihu malvebri beat. In other words, gazlanim meaning malvebri beat. Not two categories. But gazlanim, and in this particular case, we mean malvei ribit, we're calling them by an extra scornful name. Avbi shegavu marzirin, even though they already collected their interest, they have to return it. Which, of course, is Rabbi Elazar's position, and Rabbi Yochanan now has a, at least according to this interpretation of the odd statement, Rabbi Yochanan has a very strong challenge. The answer is Tanoihi, it's Machloka Tanaim, or we think it's a Machloka Tanaim, meaning that Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar are replicating a Machloka Tanaim about whether or not there's an obligation to return Ribit. The Tanya. Rabbi Nechemya and Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov potrin et hamalveh ve'et ha'arev sheish ben kumaseh. So to understand this properly, we should look ahead to the last Mishnah of the Perek, Mishnah Yud Aleph. You can see it on Daf Ayin. Hey, ve'elo ovrin belo taseh. Who violates the lo taseh of lending in interest? Hamalveh v'haloveh v'ha'arev v'ha'edim. The lender, the borrower, the co-signer, and the witnesses. Everybody who participates in the deal violates the law of Neshech and Ribit. And as you take a look in the Mishnah, you see other violations that may be there. So, a comment on that, the Breita says that Rabbi Nechemya and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov said the Malve and the Orev are exempt. Why? Because they still have an assay that they could do, and the assumption here is that it's a lav hanitak lasay. You cannot get makot for a lot assay if it has a fix built in. My kumasay lav mishum damrin lahu kum lahu duru. Isn't it because we tell them return the money, and therefore that's the kumasay? Chlal tanakama saver lav bnei adurininu. So obviously tanakama, the tana in the Mishnah at the end of the parak, believes that they do not have a mitzvah to return it. And once the malva took the money, he's violated the law. There's no fix for it. Returning is not an obligation. And now he has to get makot. Well, my kumaseh, what's the kumaseh? The kara shtara, to destroy the shtar. Meaning that we're talking about a case when of the deal was made, the shtar was written, everybody was in agreement, and now there's contrition. So who gets makot? So according to Tanakama, they all get makot. According to Rabbi Nechemya, Rabbi Zman Yaakov, the Orev and the Malva don't get makot because they've got a mitzvah of destroying the shtar. So my kasavar, what is the position of Rabbi Nechemya, etc.? I kasavar shtar medligvot kagavoy dami, if they hold that a shtar that's going to be used for collection, we consider it already collected, a machloket that we saw already in Ketubot, v'ha avdu isurayu, then they already did the prohibition. If it's already considered collected, they already did the prohibition by making the shtar. They should get makot. There's nothing to fix. V'lav kigavui dami, if we say that it's not kigavui, halo avud v'lokum, they didn't do anything. All they did was write a shtar. In other words, how can writing a shtar generate makot? Either it does generate makot because we say it's already violated, but there's no fix for it. Tearing up the shtar is nothing. Or else nothing's happened yet, so there's nothing to be liable for. So the answer is Leolam Kasar Shtar Medligvot Lav Kikavu Idami. They hold the position, which is the intuitive position, that a shtar that is going to be used for collection is not yet considered collected. Vakamash Malan, this is teaching us to Shuma Miltahi. Shuma, meaning the act of appraisal that they do in order to see the property of the Lova, etc., to write it into the shtar, that's an action. And therefore, the shtar, once they wrote that shtar, that's considered enough of an action they could get makot for. But since there's an assay, as it were, to tear up the shtar, to wipe out the case, that absolves them of the makot, at least in the meantime. Chamistabra, and by the way, it seems that that makes sense, that that's what the issue is here. Ditnan, because the Mishnah says, the Mishnah we saw, ve'ilu ovrim belo taseh, amal ve'lo v'ari v'ha'edim. Why, how are Adi mentioned in here? Bishlamakulu avun maisa, I understand the Malve lent the money, the Love borrowed the money, the Arev signed his name to agree to pay back Ribit. But, Ela Adim, I avud, what did the Adim do? Elav shmamina de shuma miltahi, it's there to teach you that participating in the process of appraisal and putting the star together is itself considered an action and generates liability, and therefore Nechemya and Elazar and Yaakov say, but it, since the star was not yet collected, therefore they still have the possibility of wiping out the bad deed by destroying the star, and therefore they don't get makot at that point. Shema minat. Amar Rav Safra. Kol she'ilu b'din. He gives a rule about to try to summarize what we just looked at, because we saw a machloket between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar. Everybody agrees that avak ribit is not returned. The machloket is whether ribit tutsar, rather regular ribit, is returned. So Rav Safra gives a rule. Kol she'ilu b'dinehem motzi'im milove lal malve. Anything that in the local courts, in the non-Jewish courts, because they don't have a prohibition of rebate, and therefore if somebody signs a contract involving rebate, they'll enforce the contract that you have to pay it. So any commitment that is so firm that the Beit Din would take the money away from the borrower and give it to the lender, in our courts, we'll do the exact opposite, meaning that commitment is so strong and that rebate is so strong that we'll take it away from the malva and return it to the lova, like Rabbi Elazar. But anything that is not so strong in their courts, they won't take it from the lova. But in our case, we won't. We won't consider that's not such a strong rebate, and it is kept by the malva. Now, Amar le Abaye Rav Yosef. So Abaye turns to Rav Yosef and asks about this rule of Rav Safra. Uchlalahu, is that really a hard and fast rule? Very Seya Baseya. The famous case of Seya Baseya, which is, if I borrow a pound of wheat. Now, I come to return a pound of wheat, but the price of wheat has gone up. There is rebate there. Dibidineam motzim milva milova lo malva. However, since that is not rebate deoraita, therefore, we don't enforce return, and yet, b'dinehem motzi'in milova malva. In their case, they say you have to pay it. So in other words, if somebody borrowed a pound of wheat, and then the price of wheat went up, and they want to return, let's say, less than a pound because of the same value, the court will tell them, you have to return that full amount. V'dineno en marzin malva lalova, but we don't do that. So in other words, Rav Safra's rule immediately finds a challenge. Amar le, Rav Yosef said back to Abaye, Inhu betar pikadon ateliade. They don't consider it a halva'ah. What they consider is a pikadon. When you borrow wheat, they consider it a pikadon. You return the pikadon, and therefore you return it as is. And really in our case, we would do the same thing. If I gave a pikadon of wheat, and then it was time to collect it, you give me back the same amount of wheat. So I'm the Ravina Ravashi. So now in the next generation, Ravina turns to Ravashi, and asks again about the rule. He says, "Vare mashkanta b'lo nechiyata." If you have a mashkanta, meaning in this case a collateral, in which they don't reduce the debt. So in other words, there's a collateral that the lova gives to the malva. Let's say a vineyard to protect the loan, and the malva gets to eat the perot, and we don't diminish the debt as a result. Which is rebate to bidineha motzin milova lamalva, but in their case, if the lova doesn't hand it over, they will force the lova to hand over the payroll to the malva. Over dineno en motzin milova lalova, but in our case, we don't have the malva return it to the lova. So Malay inu b'torat zvini atali adai. He gives the same sort of answer that Rav Yosef gave before. He says they don't consider that a loan. They consider that the mashkanta is like a sale, a temporary sale, as a protection against the loan. So therefore, Rav Safra gave a rule, but it seems like every example that we have, the rule doesn't work. So what is Rav Safra talking about in the case where he says, any case where they do force seizure from the lova, we'll have it returned? And here it's coming to say, means straight up rebate. Meaning, if somebody in their court signs a deal where they agree that they borrowed four and they're going to return five, the Beit court will force them to pay the five. In our case, if he does collect the five, they'll force the malva to return the fifth. That's Rebik Tutsah, Uche de Rabbi Elazar. And you see here, the psak like Rabbi Elazar, Rebik Tutsah is returned. So what's the flip side of Rav Safra's rule? Which is that anywhere where they don't enforce payment by the lova, if collected, we will not enforce return by the malve. That's Rebit Mukdemen or Rebit Mucheret. Rebit Mukdemen, Rebit Mucheret is dealt with in the 10th Mishnah, and it's worth it for us to take a peek at the 10th Mishnah. In the middle of the Mishnah, you have the following statement. Yesh Rebit Mukdemen, or Vagam Liel Omer. Yesh Rebit Mukdemen, Yesh Rebit Mucheret. What does that mean? Kitzat Natani, Navlo Votim, and if a guy wants to borrow money from somebody, Vayam Shalechlo Vamer Bishvil Shtalveni. And so he sends him a present. In other words, the putative borrower sends his designated lender a gift. And he says, Bishvil Shtalveni. I'm sending this to you. I want you to lend me money. Zui Rebit Mukdemet. That's called pre-rebit. Elovahi Manu Verzilo at Maotav. Or let's say a guy borrowed money, paid it back, and then he sent a gift and said, I want to thank you for the loan. Thank you for the money that I get to use in the meantime. Zuri Rebit Mucheret. That's called Rebit Mucheret. And so therefore, that's what Rav Safra is saying. Rebit Mukdem, Rebit Mucheret, which they will not enforce. Let's say that Alov has said, I'm going to borrow money from you and I'll send you a thank you gift. And then he never sends a thank you gift, their courts will not enforce it. In our case, if the Lova does send a thank you gift, which is a form of rebate or an appeasement gift beforehand, the Beit Din will not force the Malva to return it. Okay, we'll pause at this point, and Amir Tzashem, in the next podcast, we'll pick up on Daf Samach Bet Amud Bet with the example of that's given in the Mishnah with that case of the wheat and the wine. In the meantime, everyone should have a wonderful day.